It is week 32 of the year 2020, and you are listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Hello, and welcome back to another episode recorded especially for you as a patron. Although, someone brought to my attention that there is actually a feed somewhere on the internet, I think it is in Google Podcasts, that that gathers everything I post. So it's a combined feed of the walk, of my weekly show, and also, and I was not aware of this, and I don't think that Inge is aware of that too, also all the episodes of Father Roderick to the Max, which of course are supposed to be exclusive to the Patreon community. So we'll take that feed offline, and unfortunately there are not that many people subscribe to it. And so if, in case you're listening to this and you're not a patron, then I would highly recommend that you go check out patreon.com/FatherRoderick and become a patron. And you can give whatever you want, of course, just a little bit, a little fee, a little some drinking money. But then you are totally, you know, at peace with your conscience, and you can listen to this completely legally. You won't make little baby Jesus cry. But for most of you, this is just your weekly dose of content, of cooking. We're going to talk a little bit about history, comics, and other geekery, liturgy, VR, way too much probably for one show alone. So I hope you're all doing well. Let's dive into the kitchen. Allora, siamo insieme in Italia. I will cook for you another Italian recipe. And this recipe is actually a secret recipe that I've been able to find out. I'll tell you, this is I'm so excited about this recipe because it is a pasta recipe which you can only taste in one place in the world. And that is a restaurant not far from the Vatican. It's on the left side of the Vatican. And it is one of those restaurants that is frequented by many cardinals and priests and other curia members that work in the Vatican. And of course, also by a lot of journalists and people that have to cover Vatican business. And it's also one of my favorite restaurants to go to. It's called La Vittoria. And one of their exclusive dishes is a pasta dish which is called pasta califa. And I was intrigued by the name because it's not a very well-known pasta. And so you expect in an Italian restaurant, especially in Rome in a tourist area, that they do all the classics, you know, carbonara, etc. But this pasta califa, it sounded a bit oriental. So I remember one evening I ordered it, and it looked like nothing special. It was just a plate of fusilli, which is that pasta that is a little bit twisted, and it had an orange sauce, and I could tell that there were a few pieces of bacon, probably guanciale. So it's it's coming from the head of the pig, the cheeks. It's cheek fat, And I could see that there was also some white in it, so something looked a bit creamy, but I couldn't really determine what it was. And so, but it looked very bland. And, you know, I love that restaurant, but there's one thing that is awful, awful in that restaurant, and that's the lighting. The lights, it's all indirect lighting, and this is pretty common in Italy. I don't know, it's just, they should visit IKEA and get some cues how to properly light your restaurant. So you always have this very weak light in the restaurant, and it's always a bit orangey. And so I took a photo of the dish, and the result looked very unappetizing. So I took a bite, and I could not believe how good this pasta sauce tasted. And I finished a plate in an instant, and I was almost tempted to order a second one. That's how good it was. And I asked the waiter. They know me there. They call me Father Regista, so it means Father Director, because I filmed in their kitchen one day, and they thought it was the most amazing thing ever. So since that moment, when I entered a restaurant, it's all, hey, ciao, Padre Regista, Father Director. They treat me like I'm Steven Spielberg or something. So I asked the waiter, can you ask the cook what's in this recipe? I want to make this at home. This is so good. So he was like, well, I'm not sure if this is going to work. I'll do my best. So he disappears in the kitchen and reappears a minute later, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry, Father Roderick. It is the secret of this restaurant. We cannot divulge the ingredients. Well, of course, that's super frustrating, because this pasta califa was so good and so tasty. And so I tried to make it at home. I was like, how difficult can it be? It's just pasta and probably tomato sauce and some bacon and that white stuff. I don't know what it is. And some herbs, I don't know. So I tried something, and it was so awful. It did not taste at all like what I had tasted there in La Vittoria. So I went back to Rome, and I ordered it again. And I tried to, this time I really tried to pay attention. What am I actually tasting? It's almost like what you do when you're doing wine tasting or whiskey tasting. You really have to close your eyes and try to analyze. So what is it that I'm tasting? There is definitely tomato sauce, definitely the guanciale, of course the fusilli. Well, what else is it? Cheese? Is it mozzarella? So I went back home and I tried to make it, and I added mozzarella, and I tasted it, and it was nothing like the original. It was not bad, but this was not pasta califa. And so I've been on this quest for years, and just last year I went to Rome again. I went to the same restaurant, and they gave me the menu, and they had changed it. The menu was now laminated, and it was all, you know, translated in various languages. And so I was looking for my favorite pasta, pasta califa. They took it off the menu. So I asked the waitress, I told her, where's the pasta califa? Oh, well, you know, nobody ordered it, so the chef actually took it off the menu. I was like, what? This is the best pasta. I mean, I'm coming to Rome just to eat this. I've tried to make it at home, and I could not figure it out. Please, 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 would you go back to the chef and ask if he can make that califa just for me? And so she's a little bit surprised that I'm having such a strong reaction. So she goes back to the kitchen, and after about 15 minutes, comes back with a plate. And she tells me, oh, so the cook was very surprised that you asked for the pasta califa, because he didn't think that anyone would want to eat it. But he heard about your enthusiasm for the plate, so he made you this pasta califa. Unfortunately, we're out of fusilli, so he made it with just regular spaghetti. I hope you don't mind. I was like, you know, I don't mind. It's, you know, the recipe, for me, it's important, the sauce. That is the secret. It's literally the secret sauce of this dish. So I'm so grateful. And I took a bite, and yes, it is actually, the fusilli is important to the ingredient, because the fusilli, the shape, so it looks like a little whirlwind, right? A whirlwind pasta. It has it's much easier to coat it completely with the sauce, and the more it's coated, of course, the better it tastes. And so I was like, okay, I did not know. This is the first time that I really experienced how the shape of the pasta actually influences your experience of the dish. So I thanked the waitress and told her to go thank the cook. And at the end, I get the bill, and they didn't bill me for the pasta califa. And she says, well, we were so You were so excited that you were so excited about the Pasta Khalifa. So this is on the chef. This is. So I was like, oh my gosh, like, you guys are lovely. I want to hug you all, but no, I'm a priest, so I'm not going to do that. But man, that was so kind of them. So I went home, and then COVID-19 came and the corona crisis, and wasn't safe anymore to travel. And so now that summer is here, I have such nostalgia for Rome, and I'm craving for Pasta Khalifa. So I was like, okay, I have to crack the recipe. There must be a way to remake this. And I'm just going to try and try again and try again. I'm not going to give up until I figured out how to make pasta alla Khalifa. And so I started to Google. And every time I typed in Pasta Khalifa, it sent me back to the menu site, the website, and the menu on the website of La Vittoria in Rome. Until I found this one link, and it was pretty hidden. I had to scroll through multiple pages on Google that made a reference to a cookbook. I was like, whoa, would they have? Can I find the recipe in a cookbook? And it turns out that for a very special edition of a cookbook, it's called the Vatican Cookbook, 500 Years of Classic Recipes, Papal Tributes, and Exclusive Images of Life and Art at the Vatican. It's still available. And this was actually also called the Swiss Guards Cookbook. Swiss Guards, of course, are very recognizable, and they need to eat too. So probably a smart publisher was like, what if I make a cookbook with the favorite recipes of all these Swiss guards and other curia? You know, well, actually, Swiss guard is not, they're not members of the curia, but they work for the curia. So what if we do this Vatican cookbook and we'll just use the Swiss guard in the name, in the title, because then we can post all these great photos of these young men in the Vatican, and that will appeal to the target audience of our cookbook. So, yeah. So now I was like, whoa, that is so cool. So apparently the publisher figured out that this was a favorite recipe or favorite pasta dish for people that work in the Vatican. And I'm not surprised, because once you taste it, everything else falls away. So I was looking for, how can I get this cookbook? I looked it up on Amazon, and it was pretty expensive. I mean, it's a kind of almost a coffee table book. It's full of very lush photographs and everything. And then every recipe has a story and it's got photos. So it's I was looking through the table of contents, and like right there towards the end, it said Fusilli alla Khalifa. But then the rest of the cookbook, it's all stuff that either I don't care for, like the favorite German dishes of Pope Benedict XVI. I'm looking through the table of contents. I'm thinking, there's no way in the world that I'm going to cook that. I want to cook Italian. I don't like that. You know, it's this southern German kitchen. Lots of potatoes and kind of heavy stuff. Yeah, bratwurst. So I was like, I'm not going to pay so much money for a cookbook that I've been to Rome. I don't need the photographs. And most of the recipes I either know how to make or I don't care for them. So then I found this, after Googling a little bit more, I found this one website called eatyourbooks.com. And it actually had the shopping list for Fusilli alla Khalifa. So they advertise for the Vatican cookbook, and then you can click on the various recipes, but it won't give you the book, of course. It won't give you the recipe, otherwise no one would buy it. But they give you the ingredients, and that was like, I found the secret, because that is the cool thing about Italian cuisine. It is always simple. And there are always just a few ingredients, but you need to know which ones, and then you can figure it out. The quantities, you have to taste it. That's not the hard part. What is difficult is to know, so what are the main ingredients? So I'm going to share the secret with you. And I actually tried it out and it worked. I made pasta a la califa. Only change I made was I replaced the guanciale but with regular pieces of bacon, because guanciale is super expensive and really hard to find in Amersfoort. There's only this one specialized shop where they sell it. Very expensive. So, but the rest, when I tasted it, I was like, I am in Rome. This is it. I cracked the secret code. I now know how to make fusilli alla califa. And I don't want to keep you in suspense anymore. I know that you want to make this too. So here are the secret ingredients. Please don't share this anywhere else. You need basil. Of course you need basil. You need, and this is important, heavy cream. Heavy cream. I used the type of heavy cream that they sell here. You can, it has to be very fatty cream. That was the white stuff that I saw in the sauce and I couldn't determine what it was. I thought it was cheese, but it turns out it's just cream. It's so simple. I could have thought about it myself. It's not even a mascarpone or something fancy like that. It's just cream. You need parsley. You need fusilli pasta. Take the good one, the one, you know, the ones with the eggs and the more expensive one. Definitely not the whole grain variant. And don't use the spaghetti because it doesn't work with this sauce. You need tomatoes, of course. You need mushrooms. You need bacon, guanciale, if you have it. And then another important ingredient, which I did not guess, but I could have known it was this. Pecorino cheese. That was that other familiar taste that was in the sauce. And I was like, I know this. What is this? It's cheese made out of sheep's milk. So pecorino cheese. It's a hard cheese. It's very salty, very tasty, a little bit on the expensive side, but indispensable for this recipe. So then I had my shopping list. I got all the ingredients and I started preparing this. So super simple, of course. What do? You first cook the fusilli in salted water. Very important. Put salt in the water and don't be too modest with it. Because usually in Italian restaurants, they put a lot of salt in the water. It just gives the pasta so much flavor. And you don't have to put everything in the sauce or add extra salt or cheese to spice it up. So salted water, make sure the fusilli is al dente. Don't overcook it, because fusilli that is overcooked is, it loses its structure. And you need it to be a little bit al dente for the shape, this whirlwind shape, to actually, you know, to have something to chew on. Then what you do is, of course, you start with the bacon. You slice it in small blocks and you put them in a cold pan. You put the pan on the fire and then you slowly heat the pan. This is a technique that I've discussed before. What it does is it starts to melt the fat before it starts burning the bacon. So once the fat starts to melt, you can then cook the bacon in its own fat. You don't want to add extra oil. It's not necessary at all. Once the bacon is cooking, you then add the tomatoes. You can get the skin off. There's technique for that. I think you have to first put them in boiling water just for a few seconds, take them off, and then you put them under the cold faucet, and then you can just peel off the skin super easily. You slice the tomatoes in small blocks, add that to the pan, and start stirring it around. You want that to turn into tomato sauce. You can also use a concentrated tomato paste, but of course fresh is always better. Then don't add the parsley, don't add the basil yet. That is, you don't want that. So let that sauce, let the tomatoes and the bacon and the fat of the bacon, let that all fuse together. That needs time. That takes time. In the meantime, you're still cooking your fusilli. And then you grate some pecorino cheese in it to taste. But there is no quantity. I like pecorino cheese. It does give it a little bit more power and a tiny bit of that familiar flavor. It is not very overpowering. So you can just add it, just grate it over, put it in the sauce. And you can always, in the second time you make this recipe, and you will make it a second time and a third time, you can always, you know, experiment with it, with quantity. And then once that sauce is nice, you know, blended, and the bacon had time to infuse the tomato sauce, that's when you add the heavy cream. And you stir it all together until it becomes this kind of this orange color. That's why the sauce is orange. It's white plus red. And so you have this nice, thick sauce. And that is the moment that you add the mushrooms. So you slice the mushrooms in slices, and you add them. Make sure that they cook. That they, of course, need to become soft a little bit, but you don't need to fry them before or anything. They will just absorb the heat from the sauce. And then at the very last moment, you chop up the parsley, you chop up the basil, and you throw it in, and you just give it a stir, and that's it. No more. Never cook the herbs, because you're not going to taste it anymore afterwards. Then you plate it. You could either put the fusilli first and then add the sauce over it. What I always recommend doing, it doesn't look as pretty, but it is much better for the taste. You throw in the al dente fusilli, and you mix it for one more minute so that it gets slightly more soft. And you really need to stir it around so that the sauce gets everywhere in those, you know, all the crevices of the pasta. And then once it's, you know, for one more minute, that's when you plate it. And you eat it immediately, of course. Never waste time with pasta. Actually, in Italy, this is something that may surprise you. In Italy, it is absolutely not polite to wait for everyone to be served and then start eating. No, what you do is, that's why they have appetizers. They put the appetizers there. That's when you pray. And then you just start eating when your plate arrives, because it is an insult to the cook to let his beautiful pasta fusilli alla califa let it cool down. You don't want that. So the moment it is on your table, start eating. And you'll love it. This is by far my favorite pasta recipe. It's been a secret for many years, and now you know the secret too. Enjoy! So just a while ago, on July the 20th, we commemorated that in 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, the first man on the moon. And that was in 1969. And I was 1 year old at the time, a little bit older. My anniversary of my birthday is on April the 5th. And so my parents had the bright idea to get me out of bed and to make me watch the moon landing. I have no recollection, unfortunately, but I can see myself in a certain way sitting in front of that black and white television, looking at that live transmission that came from the United States, which was already something unheard of. We never had any live transmissions from. There were a few exceptions, like the Olympics, and some, you know, bigger musical festivals that were sometimes brought internationally. But this, a transmission from the moon, that was something that everybody wanted to see. And so I saw the first landing on the moon, and I don't know what I did. But I wonder sometimes, so where did my fascination for astronomy and space exploration, where does it come from? Maybe that's where it started. Maybe that's where the seed was planted. And it turned me into a huge science fiction nut and a massive fan of everything that has to do with exploring the universe. So the cool thing is that the first landing on the moon is a gift that keeps on giving. And so there was this very cool article on a British website that I found, and that actually adds some information that I had never heard before. And it has to do with one of the tasks that they gave to Neil Armstrong. Now, of course, the actual time that they spent on the moon was very, very short. I mean, they didn't walk around there for days. They were only there for about 20 minutes or so. So I think they spent more time inside the moon lander waiting for the moment that they could step out than they were actually walking around outside. And while they were outside, they had to do so many different things. One of their most important tasks was to gather moonstones. So they brought back 20 kilograms of rock samples. That's crazy. So they spent like 20 minutes just getting as many pieces of rock as possible. But then they had also asked Neil Armstrong, so if you have a second, if there is like a moment where you've finished all your other tasks, here's what we want you to do. We want you to take photographs in different directions. And the reason that they wanted photographs on the ground was that, of course, you can make plans for where it's probably a good spot to land. But even Neil Armstrong and Aldrin had to make some changes at the very last moment because the place where they were supposed to land was too rocky, I think. And so the NASA thought the more photographs we have from a first-person perspective, the more we will know, you know, where to look for future visits to the moon. And so they had asked him to photograph, for instance, one crater, I think. And that had to do with, I think, they wanted to know how deep the layer of sand was, or moon dust, you know, that fine layer of dust, which actually is very harmful. It looks like sand, but it's so much more dangerous than sand. The reason being that the sand that we know on the beach, that has all been polished by the constant movement by the sea. And so actually every sand, grain of sand, if you put it under a microscope, it's very rounded, very, very, very polished. But that's not the case on the moon because there is no friction, there is no atmosphere. So the dust that is covering the surface of the moon consists of tiny little super sharp pieces of rock that are, you know, fortunately they're super tiny, so they can't really penetrate the suits of the astronauts. But if you would bring it back and you would breathe it in, it would probably damage your lungs tremendously. So they wanted to know how thick that layer was, and the only way to establish that was by having a photograph of a crater so that you could see the different layers of sediment. And so at the very last moment, right before they were supposed to go back to the moon lander and take off again, you see Neil Armstrong running back very quickly to the edge of a crater, and then you can't really tell what he's doing. So it turns out he was like, oh, I forgot to take that photo of that crater. So he ran back, took the photo, and then came back, and then they lifted off. So one of the last things that he did was like, oh, I forgot to take a selfie. Well, he didn't take a selfie, but he forgot to take a picture. And it's little details like that that make these stories so fascinating. And there have been various movies, of course, that portray this journey of Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin. And the last one, I think I reviewed it here on the show, was it Apollo 11? Or anyway, I thought it was a good movie, a bit romanticized, and it added a personal element to the moon visit, which I thought was a very intelligent way of using something that happened, the death of one of their children, and to use it in the sequences on the moon to give it a much more of a personal impact. It's probably just a fictional moment, but it definitely, I think, added to the overall storytelling. I hope there is this one app in VR that you can play, and it actually lets you relive the whole trip of Apollo 11 in VR and in real time. And apparently it's pretty amazing, even though, of course, the graphics are not that realistic. But to be able to just sit there and hear the vibration of all the instruments and everything, apparently it is very impressive. So I'm waiting for a good deal on that app, and then I'll let you know if when I've used it. Hey, and with that, it is already time to start wrapping up things here on the show. I'm doing slightly shorter shows during the summertime because I'm having a very busy month. And also, you are probably very busy with just relaxing and enjoying the sun. And hopefully you're in a safe situation. But even if you're on lockdown, I hope you have plenty of time to just read a book and play some video games or watch a movie. Take time for yourself. So I'm keeping these about half a minute. That would be a really short podcast, but kind of half an hour per podcast. It maybe sometimes mean that I have to shift some topics to the next show, but I'll get to them eventually. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Father Roderick to the Max. Thank you so much for your ongoing support. I really appreciate it. And the latest addition to my activities online, the Mass for Geeks, is still having a tremendous impact on the people that are assisting. And there is a really beautiful community that has grown around this Mass. Also, quite a few people that are unable to go to Mass because of COVID-19. It gives them a way to connect with a broader community that prays for them. And that's all made possible by you. So you're really changing lives. And I've received so many emails that attest to that. So your help is not just helping me just do these shows. In a certain way, you're also helping this mission to actually help people and change their lives for the better. So thank you so much for that.